Hey Pounders, this is J.R. Wilco with this week's Unnecessary Foolishness. It's episode 28 of the Superfluous Poppycock Podcast. I'm here with my good friend Seth Warren, and we have a show for you today. How about that? I said we had a show. What do you think?
It's not bad.
Not bad?
I think you can get away with that with a podcast.
Okay.
I think.
It's a show. Is it a show?
It's kind of a show. We put on a show.
People say things like tune in now, and we haven't tuned in forever. Do you're old enough to remember actually tuning in, don't you?
Oh, like literally tuning.
Like you would click it like, to the channel,
yeah.
And there was that additional dial that you would turn left or right to kind of get a little fine to. Like, I want this to be somewhat less staticky than it is now.
Well, I remember you say click it to the dial. I remember turning it to the
The dial. Yes.
Oh, it was brutal times. But
I remember
so
the days
good.
When I was my father's remote control. He'd say channel 2, channel 12, channel 11, channel 13.
You remember the days of being the actual antenna yourself on the radio? Like, you'd find the station and go, oh, thank God, I got the Spurs game. Now I can't move one twitch.
I remember putting tinfoil on top of the antenna and then that holding the antenna with the left hand and then moving the right arm around until – there you go. Yes, I am my own antenna. Oof, boy, it's too bad that we can't actually affect things now when you can't – When you're dealing with lag or when – I mean, because what do you do? Stare at the router differently? Do you just like angrily give the network cable the eye?
A good point about technology because we used to have so much direct control and involvement. I could simply raise my left leg. I could, you know, potentially move the car in the driveway. I could control the reception level of whatever game, whatever event I was tuning in.
I just stood next to the antenna in different poses, or just I'd take a half step back or half step forward, and I was literally affecting.
Antenna is driving me crazy. It's like Cool Whip. Stop saying antenna.
Antenna?
It's antenna. I think it's antenna.
Maybe.
I'm pretty sure it is. Well, now you don't have a choice. You just watch the little wheel spin as it buffers, and you're completely helpless.
Yeah. It's emasculating, really.
These modern day times. Back when we were young. Speaking of technology and modern day times, and tying it in with the Spurs. I noticed something that kind of bothered me this week. We all know LaMarcus has kind of looked. A little soft over the last week or two, a little unreliable. He's not that full definitive second man or second scorer that we need over the last couple of weeks. And I halfway started to wonder if it was related to technology. Because you remember I think it was after the Warrior game. We got, you know, embarrassed at one point after the new year by the Warriors. He came out, put it on himself, and said, you know what, I'm done. I'm out of social media. I'm not going to play this game.
He just deleted his accounts. He deleted his Twitter account. If he had an Instagram account, he was off of it. I don't know if there's a Facebook page or whatever, but there were like two or three different social media avenues that he just was done with.
I'm a basketball player. I'm not going to play this anymore. I'm going to focus on my game.
He had his best part of the season last year.
Oh, he went nuts. Well, granted, flash forward to today, even though he's in this big gift giveaway thing, which is cool.
He's back on social media now? I didn't even know.
Well, and it times rather interestingly with his downturn in play. I would submit that maybe they're related.
Do you see him having a particular downturn? I just see the opening quarter of the season not being at the high level that LaMarcus had, you know, after that Warriors game, after he got off of social media.
Well, I think that there's been an inconsistency to his game over these last several games that are concerning, because especially in light of the fact that you and I have talked about, we need someone to be a far more reliable second man to Kawhi. Kawhi is carrying way too much of the load, obviously, as evidenced by the downturn in his defensive numbers this year, and we need somebody to step up. And that somebody, I mean, I don't want to say unfortunately, because it's, you know, we'll take it where we can get it, but that somebody seems to be Patty Mills and
Patty
not
Mills.
LaMarcus Aldridge. Even Pau has been stepping up a lot more lately.
It's interesting, you know. I think the beginning of the way that the season began last year, and the fact that it was a slow start for LaMarcus, and he slowly kind of got himself incorporated in the offense, slowly got comfortable, started scoring better and better. It didn't exactly... All right. He kind of laid an egg against the Warriors. And then got serious, got off social media, and just, you know, killed it for essentially the last third of the season, or at least the last quarter of the season,
right,
last year. And this year, I feel like we're kind of going through a similar thing. It's not his first year with the Spurs. It's his first year with Powell. It's his first year without Duncan. I think there's still, like, he knew how to play on the Spurs with Duncan. But the way that I look at this is that Powell is a much different player.
Sure.
Not just in the fact of the way that he interacts with the offense, but just who he's been over all these years. He played at Memphis, played at L.A., played Chicago, now he's with San Antonio. But even through all of that, he had this ongoing relationship with the Spanish national team. He's played, mm-hmm. he's played representing his country so regularly, and they have their own style, and he's been able to not vacillate. He's been able to adjust himself to the different needs of a team on an ongoing basis as his career's developed, and every single year that he's gone back to playing for Spain. LaMarcus Aldridge has been in Portland as a trailblazer his entire career, except for the last 14 months. And we're expecting him, right, he's pretty much been up there. He's been the guy, he's been the man in Portland for virtually his entire career, NBA career. He was at the point where virtually every offense was designed around his talents, designed to maximize his strengths and minimize his weakness. Or his weaknesses, and now he comes to San Antonio last year. Well, here, LaMarcus, here's a 578-page playbook to learn. Have fun, right? Obviously, Pop trims things down when we've got new players that need to be incorporated, but that's what he's doing. Like, learn this entirely new system. Learn to play with these guys. Learn to be effective in this completely foreign system to you. Okay, well, it took him a while to do that, but then, you know, a lot of the stability left with Duncan and all the other guys, the new guys coming in, including Powell, but seven new faces here. Jonathan Simmons was a bit player last year. He's part of the rotation this year. This is a whole lot more for him. And again, it's different for Powell because he's seen so many different systems. Not that he necessarily adjusts more quickly than another player or even more quickly than LaMarcus is. It's just the fact that he hasn't had to adjust. He's like, we've done this before. Sure, I know what this thing is. Or, we're doing that thing where they, I got it. Awesome. Yeah, sure, I'll be there. And as far as offense is concerned, it hasn't been as much adjustment because he's already been a part of offenses that work like the way that San Antonio's does. And San Antonio's offense is different this year than it was last year, different with Powell and adjusting to the way that all that works. And to me, there's just a bigger learning curve for LaMarcus because he's never been in a position where he's needed to learn all these things before. So it's an entirely...
You're giving him more slack, in other words, than I am.
Wow. You know what? This is kind of like a shoe on the other foot because at the beginning of the season, you talked about how much rope you were given Powell, right? How much slack you had for him.
Well, because Powell didn't have the year under his belt like LaMarcus did. And the problem here, let's quantify this. Since our last podcast, and granted we've only had two games, it's a small sample size. I didn't go any further beyond that, even though this downturn started before our last podcast. In the last week since our last podcast, LaMarcus is averaging 26.5 minutes a game. You know what he's getting out of that 26.5 minutes? 11 points and 7.5 rebounds. That's not enough. That's not a second unit guy. That's a bench guy. We gotta have more production.
So you're saying there's something that first of all, I wanna make sure we're on the same page. But first of all, as I understand it, you say that the Spurs need a number two guy.
I believe so. Yes. In fact, I think we need a two and a three. But let's focus on the number two at this point.
So first, you're saying that it can't be. And we had a number of years where Duncan was our number one guy, and who was going to show up? Was it going to be Tony? Was it going to be Manu? Was it going to be Robert Horry or Brent Barry or, you know, Michael Finley,
sure.
even,
sure.
right? But you, at this point, you feel like Kawhi's on. Well, you feel like while Kawhi is our number one, we need a bona fide, certified, no arguments about it, number two best.
Here's the way to understand it. The one thing that I really, really miss about Timmy. Timmy's not a guy that's going to get last year, year before last. He's not a guy that's going to average 25 points a game, 20 mm-hmm. points a game. However, in any given moment, he is a guy that can be reliably called upon to say, Timmy, nobody else on this team is doing it. Nobody else is putting it together. Everybody else stayed in the locker room. You got to rise up. I mean, you look at the games in which we were not playing at our best, and Tim Duncan said, all right, I'm TD. I got this. I'll take over. Now, I can't do this every night, guys, because my legs are about to fall off, but I'll give you 18
and
10
tonight.
I'll give you tonight. LaMarcus seems unable or unwilling to take on that role. Kawhi can be our alpha dog, but we need somebody. Kawhi's not going to be shooting perfect every night. He's going to have his off nights, and he's going to have those nights where he can't be expected to shield both the offensive and the defensive load. We need somebody to step up as our second star to bury that. And Powell's been making some good strides. The only reason I gave Powell so much rope is because, look, we've all heard and we all understand that the Spurs system is extraordinarily complicated compared to other teams. You give Powell a lot of time. I've said let's give Powell half a season or possibly even the full season before we maximize or see the maximization of his benefits. LaMarcus doesn't have that excuse, not to mention the fact that he seemed over that curve the second part of last year in the season. And to see the regression over the last couple of weeks for me is concerning because Patty can't fill that role, not with long-term consistency. We've got to have LaMarcus being LaMarcus Aldridge. I mean, I don't remember if it was David Aldridge or if it was Amin Alhassan on ESPN the other day talking about how, you know, LaMarcus is definitely the second best power forward in the game. We need LaMarcus being the best power forward in the game. Going back circa a couple of years.
Who did they put ahead? Was it DeMarcus Cousins?
No, they put Blake. DeMarcus would technically be a five, but they put Griffin ahead of him. Which I tend to kind of disagree with that, but LaMarcus's inconsistency separates him from number one.
We want from other people what we feel like we give ourselves, right? Or at least more than what we give ourselves, right? And I don't know if this was my dad teaching me, whether it was one of my high school coaches or whatever, but I always heard this beat into me from such an early age that I can't remember it being beat into me. I just always knew. If my outside shot wasn't falling, I took it inside.
Right, right.
And I refuse to judge LaMarcus Aldridge by these are pros. These guys are better than I can ever dream of being. I don't know, maybe I could dream of being as good, right? But there's no comparison at all, right?
Right.
And also, there's different systems being used. There are certainly times when tons of things that my high school coach taught me are just completely inapplicable for the Spurs, especially offensive rebounding, which they just pretty much don't go for at all for very specific reasons why, and considered reasons, and valid reasons, and probably, you know, great, for their system, right? But whenever I see him missing shot after shot from outside,
16-foot jumper,
he's just not on.
Yeah.
I don't think, hey, we need to feed LaMarcus more. I think it's not LaMarcus's night, guys. Ignore him, or let's post up the guy and get him going.
Well, and that's the difference between he and Duncan. Duncan had those, you know, the bank shot night is not falling. I'm going to go in and muscle myself into 15 points. If LaMarcus, if his 16-foot jumper is not falling, he's out of the game. He's useless. He's not a player that we can rely on to deliver anything offensively.
While I completely get the gripe, and I'm as frustrated with that as you are, I feel at least as frustrated as you are. It's not just on LaMarcus either, right? You'll see Tony bringing up the ball, and Pop points to his eye and points to his tie and puts his four fingers down. He's making the call. LaMarcus can't root himself on that post and say, "Hello, Spurs offense, please crash to, you know, come to a crashing halt here." While I get my post touch, because I got to get going, because I can't hit anything from outside. He's got to be a team player and play within the system and take the shots that he gets. because he's not the alpha dog. He doesn't get to dictate in that way.
Well, sure, but I think in its simplistic form, you got to make the shots you get then. And the other central issue I have with LaMarcus, and we see it in Powell, but again, you know, my patience level with a new guy like a Powell learning the system, my problem in seeing this last several weeks or this perceived downturn that I have on LaMarcus, the ball sticks way too much. There's not enough ball movement with LaMarcus to give me more patience or to at least allow me, like you said, you're not going to judge. I have no problem judging. And part of what prevents me from not judging and being more patient is just seeing the ball stick at such an epic degree with him lately.
I would love, I'm going to watch this more often and see whether Powell moves the ball more than LaMarcus.
Don't take the, again, you can't compare the two. I want to play some independent of each other because of Powell's rookiness or his newness in the Spurs system.
All right.
But Powell, since you brought that up, Powell has been looking better.
No doubt. No doubt. On offense, he's scored quite well, and we've been able to lean on him, when the Spurs have possession, no doubt.
Well, perhaps Coach Timmy might ought to be playing one-on-one with LaMarcus in practices as opposed to Powell.
That was fun watching them go at it, wasn't it?
Oh, that was gorgeous. It was so neat. Yes. Just seeing Timmy on the floor.
Just seeing him on the floor. I'll tell you that the next day after that, there was another quick video that Jeff McDonald put up of Monty Williams and Tim. And Tim had the ball, and you could tell he didn't quite have his rhythm. He's not obviously playing every single day anymore. And he tried to go between his legs, tried to do a couple of quick dribble moves, and wound up kind of booting it. And apparently, according to McDonald, Monty was pretty much schooling Tim in that one-on-one session. But, you know, that's fine. I mean, the guy's retiring on Sunday. Well, hold on. The guy has retired, and they're retiring his jersey on Sunday. So,
Are you going to be in attendance, by the way? We haven't talked about this.
We didn't. We didn't, and I'm happy to discuss it at this point. This kind of this goes back to the whole bucket list thing.
Oh, I know.
And I might as well have this conversation now because I don't think we've ever done this on the podcast. If I had never been to an NBA championship game in which my team won the championship, and you asked me, to deal out to my, you know, like all the cards that I would put out on the bucket list, I would put that on the bucket list. I would say I want to see my team win a championship in person. But now that I've done it, and it wasn't as satisfying as I expected it to be, because like 2013, 2014, fantastic season.
Right.
It was a fantastic moment. The finals were awesome. Game 5 of the finals was phenomenal. But I missed having my family with me. I watched all season the games with my wife and my son right there with me, you know, putting all the rest of the kids to bed and sit there and watch it. And then to watch game 7 of the 2012-2013 finals and have it miss like that, and then to watch them make good and have that retribution and have that not really revenge, but that make
reckoning.
Good moment. The reckoning, thank you. The reckoning moment, and then not to have them with me. It was stale. It was flat. It wasn't what I wanted it to be for a lot of different reasons.
See, and I'm the opposite.
And so
I got to enjoy it solo.
because of that, I didn't really enjoy it until I was driving home, until I was nearly home, until I got to, you know, commiserate with them and talk with them about what they, you know, enjoyed and all that stuff and share it with them. And as a result, I'm like, you know what? I'll go to games. I'll see. There's still a lot about the experience of an NBA game in person that I really enjoy. But for the most part, I've had enough of that, and I want to be at home.
Well, and you can't get greedy. My wife made a good point a couple of years back.
Couple of years since she's made a good point? Woof.
If that.
I know who I'm texting this afternoon.
Yeah. Well, she made a good comment. I think it was, gosh, what year was it? Was it... I don't even remember what year it was. She made a good point, but it was one of our championship runs, and I was looking at flying out to a game, and I haven't missed a large amount of our championship games or any of our jersey retirements or you know celebrations, Riverwalk parades or anything like that. And I have such good memories of that of with friends and kind of like you do, but in a sense I keep that within the box that is me, and I have that memory independent of who I'm with or anything like that. And you know, she commented that you're getting kind of greedy at a point because after, you know, after five championships, you're not going to keep duplicating that. I mean, I just remember in 99 and I remember the parade and I remember, you know, being younger and a lot cooler and more hair and less gut and stuff like that. Everything's just the nostalgia spirit of a human being is so fascinating from a psychological perspective. Sure, sure. Everything was perfect in 99. It was perfect in 03. At some point, I'm going to go, even though it's an incredible event, and I'm going to be disappointed because it doesn't live up to the incredible event that I've created in my mind. It might more than likely not even be fully accurate, but I've simply drummed it up so much. So I've kind of backed off. I think once you've been to several big events in your fandom, you have to deliberately take a step back, either that or lower your expectations to an abysmal level as to not be disappointed. Because it's possible nowadays for someone like me to go to a parade and almost be disappointed that it wasn't more exciting. And it's, I mean, these are first world American sports problems.
But, it definitely is. And if there is a first world of the NBA, then you would have to expect that the Spurs would be pretty close to the center of it.
Oh, I think they're on top of it. They're the core of the first world of sports at this point. But where else do we go from here? We wanted to talk. I know you and I were probably on the same page with defense. And, you know, I would submit to you, I think it's time pretty soon for us to move Dedmon into that starting lineup. And I've been saying this for weeks, but I think, you know, a lot of us, I think, would be surprised to see this player defensive rating, the best defensive players right now on the floor, you know, measures the team's points allowed per 100 possessions. Five, our good old boy Aaron Baines. Go, Aaron. Mm-hmm. Four, C.J. Watson. Three, Torian Prince. Two, Juice at 93.1.
Okay.
And then number one, Dewayne Dedmon. The only player in the 80s. And if that's not a good enough reason as any to move him into the starting lineup sooner rather than later, I don't know what is.
You know what? At this point, and I think I started this entire conversation between us about Paul, about, you know, not being like the whole reason that you said that you were giving him plenty of slack early on was because I was disappointed in what I was seeing from him from defense. But I'm going to say at this point, I don't think I really care right now who starts. As long as the Spurs aren't losing the first quarter, I really don't care who starts. I'm much more interested in who's closing the game. And Pop has already shown a willingness to go out to go to battle in crunch time at the end of the fourth quarter with Mills out there instead of Parker, with Dedmon out there instead of Powell, instead of LaMarcus. And honestly, I'm good with that. I'm good. It doesn't have to be so much who's starting. I think it's maybe more who's getting the most minutes, or maybe even who's closing is more important for me.
Well, I mean, to be fair, we're not exactly – Brooklyn was kind of a blip on the radar, but we're not exactly blowing teams out in the first quarter. We didn't win the first quarter against Chicago, and we've been losing fourth quarters lately because we've been starting slow, and then we've been picking it up and having to play out of our minds to win the rest of the game. So I don't know if – you know, if I completely agree with that, but I get where you're going.
Okay. So
And as a side note, let's divert a minute.
Oh.
How much do you love Juice? How much do you love Jonathan Simmons?
I'm telling you.
Every time he hits the floor. He's just a human highlight reel.
Every time he hits the floor. There you go.
But I'm still not sold on the nickname Juice.
I think it might just be the connotations of where that nickname's been.
Well, yeah.
Hey, put that nickname down. You don't know where it's been.
Well, I think collectively as a world a family or as a world culture. I think juice, you know, we have collectively decided to stop naming our baby boys Adolf. I think juice kind of falls into that same category in a lot of ways.
Wow.
And yet we're still saddling Jonathan Simmons with juice. So we need to come up with an acceptable but yet equally dynamic nickname for John and pass that along to Bill.
How about OJ? Is that okay? Can we do that? Never mind. That's just as bad as Adolf. No, that's too bad. That is quite the thing. Yikes. I did not think that we were going to go, in the Hitler direction, today. I wasn't prepared for that.
It's a decision we all made as humanity. We decided, you know, we're not going to name our boys Adolf anymore. We're just not going to do that. Probably not the best decision.
Pretty much as a planet. Yeah.
Yes,
we're on that.
We're not going to do
train.
That. Juice is not quite in that category. But it's making a run up the mountain, but yet we jump straight on to juice when it comes to Jonathan Simmons, and I like it.
Jump straight on. It just is something that developed over time.
Who's responsible? Is it Bill Land?
No, it was. There were a couple of. No. Bill. It was a. They were talking about the energy that the second unit brought last year, and Simmons came out a couple of times, or you know, Manu said something about how they brought some juice, or because that's kind of Manu's word, you know, and then Simmons came out a couple of games in a row and really brought energy and everything, and energy for Manu is juice, and so he said that, and it just kind of stuck after you know, like the second half of last year, or yeah, right around the midpoint or last year.
Well, as long as there's no limitations on social norm or acceptability, how about Zodiac? Let's go, Jonathan Simmons, the Zodiac. He is slaying his defensive assignments all over the floor.
Oh my goodness!
He's slaying the basket right now. Jonathan Simmons slashing to the hoop. The Zodiac strikes again.
We could come up with inappropriate nickname after inappropriate nickname if we were so inclined.
Knifing to the hole. There's the Zodiac again. Wow. For the Spurs.
That's probably enough. I think I'm done. I think I don't know, son of Samsonite? I don't know, anyway. I know have been digging into the numbers for Kawhi. And it's obvious that he's our number one. There's no doubt he's our best player. But, you know, there are several areas that he's not been the best on the team this year. You got some details around that?
You know, again, this comes down to per 36-minute stats, and I don't so much like the per 36-minute stats. But even if we fill up the game stats, Kawhi is not in our top five players when it comes to field goal percentage. And that concerns me significantly. He is his usage is high, but his field goal percentage has always been exceptionally high as well. Yeah. He's not in our top six on 3-point percentage. That concerns me as well. If you extrapolate this down per 36 minutes, he's not in our top five on assists either. He doesn't lead the team in steals necessarily per 36 minutes. Manu leads it in a per 36. Kawhi leads per game. But Manu leads in a per 36. I just don't like where that trends this part of the year and this first part of the year. You know, Kawhi leads us in turnovers, which we didn't start the year seeing. So I don't like that trend either. You know, you're willing to make some trades in that he's leading us in points at 24.5, 24.7. Mm-hmm. But I would almost submit to you that the revolution that has occurred in your hometown of Houston – I can barely say it. Your hometown of Houston, in what D'Antoni has done, and I hate Coach Duh. I absolutely despise the guy. Okay. I have since he was in Phoenix. I just don't like him. I think he's overrated. I think his coaching style is somewhat fraudulent for the modern-day NBA. However, what he's done with James Harden, he hasn't converted him into a defensive wizard by any means. Oh. But Harden is still the offensive dynamo. But he's also getting everybody involved. He's also integrating himself into that team and assisting. You know, he's throwing a lot more assists per game, dropping a lot more dimes.
So you'd like Kawhi to be more like James Harden. And that's the end of this podcast, folks.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's where we basically get taken off the internet, or we break the internet by saying that. I would like Kawhi Leonard to follow in the mold of James Harden as it pertains to including the rest of the team. I don't like that he's averaging just 3 assists a game. He needs to be a lot more of a facilitator. But unfortunately, and coming back to the first part of our podcast, we can't rely on him to be a facilitator when he's proven, I got this, guys, I can score. He can put the ball in the hole. He can put points on the board, and we can't rely on that from anybody else outside of Patty. So until somebody else steps up and enables him to facilitate the ball more and then in turn focus a lot more on his defensive game, he's stuck being the alpha dog with low assists and a slipping defense.
You know, I understand the tendency to look at the amazing things that Harden is doing in Houston, say, you know what, he's Houston's best player, Kawhi's the San Antonio's best player, you know, he should get everybody involved more. But you're talking about guys with in entirely different skill sets.
Trevor, yeah, I don't know if I'd go. Explain yourself.
Kawhi is,
because I think we can.
Kawhi's a fantastic talent, and he's added on to his game every year. And there are things that Kawhi is going to do next year that he's not currently doing. And there's things he's going to do 2 years from now that would just blow us away if he did it even once. That he's going to do regularly. He's growing his game. He's phenomenal at being able to become who we need him to be. But Harden's 2 years beyond where Kawhi is. He's been in the league 2 years longer, and I think that Kawhi will eventually get to the point where he's maybe not quite the playmaker that Harden's proven himself to be under D'Antoni with the ball in his hands so often, but he's definitely going to be more of a playmaker. I just think that we have to let Kawhi be Kawhi. I don't think there's any way that we can ask him to be even a percentage of what Harden is, because Harden is Harden. He's a different dude. Now, watching the way that Kawhi began this season, going to the line all the time, drawing fouls that he never did before, we're kind of getting used to his ability to do that, but he hasn't even sustained that for an entire season yet.
Well, yeah. Sure, and I'm not. And let's be clear, I'm not asking Kawhi to be Harden himself. Mm-hmm. I'm just using Harden as an example of a player who, midpoint of his career, adapted his game and integrated more of a facilitation mindset into his game. I don't know that Kawhi even has the ability to do that now, because, like I said, there are too many inconsistent. Who's he going to get the ball to? I mean, if he is, you know, I'd love to see his usage rate of. I guess what I'm saying, I'd present to you that it's a lot smarter and a lot better for the Spurs to have the ball in Kawhi's hands if you're looking for 2 points than in anybody else's hands.
Sure.
He's more likely to deliver those points. Therefore, and I guess that's true in Houston in a lot of ways too, but I would like to see him getting everybody else more involved and playing less ISO. Because I think that's going to be one key to really push us to the next level. I mean, you know, we've talked about, record aside, something still feels missing. Something still feels kind of amiss with our team. What is it, and how do we fix that? I think this is one of those things. If we could bump up Kawhi's assists and his facilitation, and in turn rely on more offensively out of LaMarcus or Powell, then I think that solves the problem. And, you know, the one guy, too, that always escapes this kind of criticism, is Danny Green still a Spur? Because he's doing great offensively, but I would love, or defensively, I'd love to see him show up offensively at some point.
I'm just glad that he's shooting his career percentages from three. Because long as his percentages are on, I will take as many points as he's able to give. Because it's the offense's job to get him shots. It's not Danny Green's job. We are not going to put that on him. Hey, Danny.
Yeah, but he also.
Hey, Danny.
You haven't
scored your 8 points tonight. I need you to go out and get those. No,
that's
the offense taking what the defense gives him.
You're reading too much into it. He has last year to thank for this year now hitting his statistical norm. If you can read between the lines of what I'm saying right there.
He didn't hurt his numbers that much from one subpar year.
Okay.
Take last year out, and he's hitting his career norms this year.
We'll have to agree to disagree.
Well, that's a numbers thing. There's no agreement or disagreement. I get off
whale's
the...
vagina. We're gonna have to agree to disagree, because I think that last year he dipped his numbers in such a way that this year, when he's simply hitting that norm, we're relieved. That's not my expectation for Danny. When we re-upped a year or so ago, that wasn't my expectation. I wanted to see a little bit more offense.
Let's try this. Let's try this instead. Every time you say that there's something off about this team, that there's something this team hasn't done, I immediately think, haven't I kicked enough holes in this? I mean, you don't get over a Tim Duncan overnight. But I actually think that I've got something else that can kind of explain that.
Okay.
And it's the fact that this isn't a defensive juggernaut team anymore. And you've as long as you've been a Spurs fan, you're used to the Spurs going out there and shutting teams down and locking them down. The team is far better on offense this year than it is on defense. Now it's top 10 again in both.
It's five defensively.
Well, it might be top five defense over the last little bit, but it's only barely snuck into the top 10 as far as overall defense is concerned.
Well, the team's defensive rating right now is number five, and the team's rim protection, DFG percentage, is number one in the league. So we're not a team to sit on defensively. I mean, granted, the Zodiac highlight reels and the Kawhi highlight reels distract you from the fact that we're not the juggernaut we are under Duncan, but we're no slouch. Defensively, we're still a top five team.
But the team is winning more. No, because the overall defensive numbers that the team is just inside the top 10, and that was as of Monday. The defensive rating numbers that you're looking at are good, and they're absolutely optimistic. I mean, they keep me optimistic about the team's overall capability, but it's been outside of the top 10 for a while. It's number 6 in offense and number 10 in defense now. Again, these are numbers as of Monday, as of the 12th of December, 12/12/16. And so that being in the top 10 in both areas is great, but the team is leaning on its offense, and I think that probably is one of the things that you're picking up on and going, something seems off. Yeah, they're better on offense than defense, and that's not been the historical norm of the San Antonio Spurs.
Yeah, I don't know that I agree with you. Because it's not that we haven't been good on offense in the last several years. In fact, if anything, I would submit we've been far more well-rounded than we are this year offensively. Kawhi is so difficult to stop. He's going to get 25 points a game on the mean, and you cannot stop him. So beyond that, I mean, we're used to seeing games in which somebody comes in and stops Tim Duncan. But then what happens? Tony fills the void and steps up. You know, you get a point guard that stays in front of Tony. Manu all of a sudden has a Manu-rific type of game.
Manu-rific.
I mean, we're seeing a lot less well-rounded scoring than we have in the past. But I think scoring-wise, you know, I don't know that the scoring is really what sticks in my craw, so to speak, as an old man. I don't know if that's what it is that I just can't put my finger on it. It's obviously, you know, Tim Duncan has a lot to do with not being on the floor, but there's something when I watch a game as a fan, there's something that we're missing. I don't know if it goes back to, you know, you and I have talked before about the strangest thing is there are no gimmies anymore. With Timmy not on the court, there aren't any gimme games. There aren't this game you mark on the schedule and go, well, that's a W. You know, this team seems a lot. The point differential, that's another big thing that you and I have talked about. We have one of the lowest differentials we've had in the last 10 years. So that steps up a little bit, but I don't think you can definitively say that's because we're stronger on offense and we're weaker on defense. Because the numbers just simply, I don't know where you're getting your team defensive rating, but I'm looking at the team defensive rating right now on stats.nba.com, and it's we're top five. There's no quantification of, well, that's just the last few games. That is on the season. We're top five. Opponents points allowed per 100 possessions. And either way, top five or top 10, it's semantics. We're a defensive. We're a good defensive team, any way you cut it.
We're a fair defensive team.
We could be better, yes.
We could be better, right? And the fact that we were not playing well defensively through the first month, through the first, I would even say maybe this first 6 weeks of the season.
Right. That hurts us, yeah.
And that's weird. And watching a team that even up until last year, like historically great defense and dominating teams, just by them not being able to score, and right. as often and as regularly that the Spurs have gotten lit up for 40-point quarters this year, I would submit that that's one of the reasons why you're still feeling like there's some weirdness or there's something you can't get your brain around, right?
Well, you may be right on that. Thankfully, we have a coach who's not afraid to compare us to plumbers and to come out in the media and really throw us out. Pop made news this past week saying, quote, guys get a lot of money to be ready to play. Asked whether it was his job to make sure the Spurs were ready to play, Pop said, quote, I don't remember playing tonight. No Newt Rockne speeches. It's your job. If you're a plumber and you don't do your job, you don't get any work. I don't think a plumber needs a pep talk. A doctor botches operations. He's not a doctor anymore. If you're a basketball player, you come ready. It's called maturity. It's your job. Period. End quote.
I don't think a plumber needs a pep talk. Wow.
I think he's 100. That's vintage Pop. It's awesome to read that. You got to wonder if some of those other guys hearing that are reading between the lines and going, wait, I could lose my job? Because I think that's the next step if we keep laying eggs like we did over the past 2 weeks.
Man, I just – who do you think that was pointed at, if anyone particularly?
If you had to point at someone specifically, and again, this is just my opinion right now, my number one probably pointer finger goes to LaMarcus.
Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing.
I think Powell has been somewhat disappointing in a lot of ways. However, again, you gotta be smart and you gotta be fair in this situation and give Powell a little bit more leniency, especially since he's been turning it on late. You can't be pointing at Patty. He's playing out of his mind, out of his ability that we thought capable of. You know, Kawhi, we can pick at Kawhi's game and say maybe you pass the ball more, maybe you throw some more dimes, but that's really kind of, it's really kind of weak sauce. He's given us 25 points a game, and up until, you know, Russ Westbrook went on his historic tear, Kawhi's top three MVP vote getters at this point. So I think it really just leaves, you know, Danny, again, I'll throw Danny out there and say we need more from Danny. But LaMarcus would probably be my finger recipient at this point.
Yeah, I'm not gonna disagree with that. But I do want to bring a little realism to bear here. I want to do a little some perspective. How about that?
Okay.
Golden State Warriors. Okay.
Okay.
We're just two games back from them.
The Spurs
are just two games back, and that's just. I mean, come on, a game and a half, two games. They were just a game the other day. I mean, let's just look at the loss column. One game back in the loss column.
Well, and that's and the point you're making is it does not go on deaf ears because, guys, we are pedestrian at home at best. I don't know if pedestrian is even the right word. We're according to our standards and expectations, we're pretty horrific at home. Add that in the equation. Add the fact that, you know, many, many of us, a lot of people I've talked to as well, feel the same way as me. There's something that's not quite right that we need to gel. We need to get together. And we will, obviously, before the end of the year. It's one of those learning years with a lot of new pieces. Mm-hmm. But once we figure out what that is and bring that together. So that plus the abysmal home record, and we're still just two games back of the all-time greatest super team that was created in a lab of demigods and all. I mean, we're still one of the best teams in the league.
Yeah, it's
with
cool.
that. It's
yeah.
way better than I think we could have anticipated or planned for. So I don't mean to sound cynical at all. No.
You just sound like a Spurs fan, that's all.
Yeah.
All right. We're getting towards the end here now. What do you have for me, superfluous poppycock wise?
Oh, you know, it dawned on me this week. And again, there's so many little examples, and you can call it pious, you can call it self-righteous. You know, you're probably right being a Spurs fan, and when you got a handful of rings, it gives you the right to be a little bit pious. But I'm often so thankful. You know, we discussed this when Timmy retired, and there's just a quick post-it note out to the fans, and adios. I mean, there's the question, is Timmy even going to be there on the 18th? We don't even know if he's going to show up. There's that kind of story that comes out of Spursdom that makes me so happy to be a fan, because we're so understated, we're not flashy, we don't demand attention. It's not players who are brand first, game second. I mean, it's not players. They're so focused on their Q rating. And I struggle so much with LeBron James. I'm never going to call him King LeBron James. I think it's the stupidest, most, you don't go to seven finals and lose half of them and get to become King. But something he's been doing over the last several weeks, it really caught my attention as a Spurs fan, because you don't see this stuff out of our stars, out of any players on our team. You just don't see this level of self-aggrandizement. All that he's done to remain relative in the NBA news cycle, he really hasn't been playing out of his mind. I mean, he's playing LeBron basketball, he's playing well, but I think everybody, even inside of Cleveland, would acknowledge, I don't want to say sandbagging, but he's pulling the reins back a little bit. He's taking a cue from what we patented as Spurs and recognizing this is a long grind. I need to be ready because I don't know who else is going to be on this team when it comes to the finals and whoever I face from the East. I need to pull it back a little bit. Don't worry about these 40-point games. Stats, numbers, that doesn't mean anything. But I've got to figure out a way to still be relevant, because we've got so many spotlights out there in Golden State. And, you know, Russell's teared it up out there. And then the Clippers are constantly have their hand up in the air for people to pay attention to them. So I got to do something to remain relevant. So first we get this story with Phil Jackson about, you know, the posse thing. And you and I have touched on that. It's annoying to me because you've got two angles to look at this from a PR perspective. Either you've got a 70-something-year-old racist who deliberately said something to create a problem, or you've got somebody who just innocently didn't recognize the culture, didn't know, used the word, shouldn't have. Either way, if you're LeBron, you go one of two ways. You either validate the racist by making it a story, or you just let it go and say, look, this guy's an icon. You know, I'm going to be the bigger man. I'm going to let it go, make it a non-story. So you've got that one. He chose poorly. Then you've also got the newest story. I'm not going to stay in any hotel owned by Trump. I don't care about your politics. Congratulations. You're leading a social movement. You're a justice warrior. You're an employee of the team. Can you not just go to the team itself and say, guys, listen, this is just my personal belief. We don't even need to get on the news to do this, because I don't necessarily want the credit and the pat on the back. I just think my own conviction, this is something we need to avoid doing as a team. And then you make that decision and you move forward without ever calling the newspaper. LeBron makes that phone call. Chooses poorly again. And it just made me that much more appreciative to be a Spurs fan, because you just don't see all of these desperate attempts to stay in the limelight from any Spurs. They come to work, they play, they do their job, they go home. Just like plumbers.
Just like plumbers. Only apparently some of them still need pep talks.
Well, and that is the case. No Newt Rockne speeches, but pep talks. So that's my superfluous poppycock is LeBron being LeBron.
Well, you know what? We have no LeBrons on the team, and that works just fine for me. And that'll do it for this episode, Pounders. We'll see you next time. Until then, keep safe and let it fly.